I guess welcome back to Mixed Media. And here's part three of our Arguing with Reddit series. We're going through, we have Ben here again this time, and we're going through some hot takes that we found on Reddit and elsewhere on the internet for each of us to react to. We haven't asked this yet, and we haven't gone around the room yet, but how were you guys' weeks? I know Ben was abroad, so it's a little bit different for him, but how are you guys doing?
I'm doing all right, doing pretty much the same thing, pretty much. Waking up, going to school if I have it, going to work if I have it, coding something, and then sleeping, pretty much. So, game is coming along all right. Getting a demo level set up, that's pretty much it.
How about you, Ben?
So other than listening to some Hyde, like I said, a little bit in the last segment. It was a pretty good week. I did a lot of bird watching while I was up there. A lot of sea bird watching.
Did you see anything new?
I did. I think I saw 9 new species.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cool.
Do you keep track of the species that you do come across?
I do. So yeah. I'm up to 182 species.
Oh, wow.
Essentially since the start of the pandemic, so.
That's pretty awesome. Sounds like an odd comparison, but the coaster community is very about, credits. I don't know if you call it that in the bird world, too, but, there are rare credits, and you want to flaunt what you've seen or been on and whatever.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. I'd say people like to compare birding to Pokemon Go.
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you just don't get to keep them, but you got your list. You show people what you've seen, where you go hunt for rare bird. Oh, somebody saw a rare bird by this bridge. So you drive out there.
Cool. For me, what's been going on? Oh, I'm Ariella, my company, might be doing some work with another podcast, a podcast that is much larger than ours, which may benefit us. We'll see. No promises yet. We'll see if it works out. I'll let you guys know in the future if that works out and if Ariella is jumping on another podcast bandwagon in terms of production and marketing and all that kind of stuff. So, I guess let's start with music again, since Ben hasn't been around in the first segment. Let's see.
So I'll read this. This is on our unpopular opinion. Criticizing musicians for not writing their own songs is just as dumb as criticizing actors for not writing their own movies. The title says it all. Performance art is still an art that requires tremendous talent and dedication to truly master. But I see people on Reddit almost daily taking crap about successful musicians for not writing their own music. It's extremely ignorant to say that or feel that way. And I guarantee that unless they're just trolling, the people who say this would change their opinion if they saw the hard work and dedication that goes into putting on a musical performance. My initial thought on reading that is there are two ways you can look at that. So I assume this person is talking about pop music, not about orchestral music. I assume that, at least from the title. But as he gets on there, it starts saying a performance art, and it does seem to sort of implicate or be about, not implicate people who are criticizing just generally people who play works of other people. So I don't know if that's exactly what the person is referring to or not, but I'll take that out first. That's mostly what I do. I play other people's music. You do not have to write your own music to be a musician. The great thing about music, unlike a lot of other art forms, it shares this with things like theater and dance. The work doesn't exist. It exists only the moment where it is performed, and it's always performed new. You need somebody to bring it into life. And it's always nice if you can hear the composer conduct their work or play their work if it's a, you know, piano, single instrument. But that's not even, doesn't have to be the definitive version of it. Yeah, that's a cool thing about performance art. Anytime you do it, you are being part of that art, work of art. And anybody, you know, provided you have a technical means to do it, they can be part of that living work. So, yes, that's, I agree. Very silly if you criticize people for that. Now, I assume that mostly this is discussing like pop artists who don't write their own works and instead have a bunch of guys from Sweden, you know, I think mostly like Sweden and Norway writing their pop songs, and then they go out and perform them, and the people from Sweden get like maybe, you know, tiny little line credit, like if you buy the actual CD, but you won't see the name anywhere else. Yes. Okay. So is that a thing in the world of pop? Absolutely. Is it kind of silly? Well, I guess it says that a lot of our big pop stars can't actually write music, and they have to farm it out to a bunch of people in Sweden, first language isn't even English, to write music for us. Does that deserve a little bit of criticism? Yeah, probably a little bit, especially if the artist passes these things off as like authentic expression. You know, if you're like One Direction, he does this, and like Katy Perry and things like that. If you're gonna try and pass these, like what you're doing is like your authentic expression of, you know, no, it's not. It's not coming from your soul. Maybe your performance might, but like the writing of it doesn't. But I think it's more of an indictment of the entertainment industry in general, not so much the particular artist, because what that just says to me is mostly people who do this are people who are kind of taken in by the entertainment industry as an act, right? You don't go to a Katy Perry concert to like marvel at how gorgeous her natural voice is. I don't know, what's her name? Like Miley Cyrus or something. They're an act, and they are selected from many other probably better performers because of their marketability, you know, in terms of their looks, whatever else the people in charge of these things think are appealing. And then they say, well, great, so we've made you a singer, but you don't actually have any ability to write something, so we got to get someone to write something for you. And I think that is kind of a pretty disgusting practice. Obviously, yeah, you know, they're probably right a lot of times about like what it is people want to see, and that's probably more important in some ways than the music itself, but that does a disservice to the performer and also to the people who are writing these things and just to the art form of music in general.
Yeah,
I think mostly agree with that. I think what's interesting is that in rap, it's like not like appreciated at all if you don't write your own lyrics. it depends on what section of rap, I guess. But I feel like in the majority, it's like seen as like dirty and like that shouldn't happen. You know, I wonder why it is that it. But probably because you're. Well, it depends. Like, so for example, certain people. For certain people, the skill of rapping is a lot easier if they're doing like more mundane things, and their selling point is the lyrics that they say, you know, and their ability to be lyrical. And if you don't even have that, then like you're just not doing anything, essentially. Of course, some people who are able to rap particularly hard things, whether it be like speed or like crazy alliteration or whatever it is, without like tripping over their words and stuff like that, then like, yeah, that's quite the skill. And I don't know. It's not too much rap. It just feels like wrong for them to not write their own lyrics. I don't know.
I would say hip hop culture has a very unique stance on this issue, where it's like it comes from a. There are a few things about hip hop that are just like it's not really hip hop if these things aren't true. So like, it comes from a competitive nature. So like, you know, historically it's a it's part artistic, part competitive. On the hardcore side of that, that'd be like rap battling, you know, like literally like, you know, toe-to-toeing it with someone. On the least extreme side, you'd have like, you know, your still hip-hop, but, you know, pop artist like, I don't know, like Kendrick or I don't know, J. Cole or someone like that. You know, that's on the other extreme, but it's still, they're still competitive. Their lyrics still contain affirmations of their own skill, attacking other people's inability to be as good as them at rapping and assembling lyrics and all that kind of stuff. And the thing is, like, if you're not actually doing that, then none of that means anything. And the thing is, if hip hop was devoid of that, it would not be hip hop anymore, or at least the hip hop scene would have significantly diverged from its like original, I guess, contents. It would be very different. If there was zero competitive aspect to it. Yeah, I think that's interesting, though. That's very interesting. I would, you know, it's like, you know who doesn't write his own lyrics anymore? Kanye. But he's still, like, a huge figure in hip-hop. He writes, like, some of his lyrics. He makes flows, so, like, his rhythms are his, mostly. But then he'll, like, ask some other rapper, usually some other famous person, to help him fill out sequences. To get the point across that he's trying to get across. The thing is, though, that no one can, well, some people do, but it's generally frowned upon to put Kanye in like the best MCs, like best rappers of all time list because of that. Even though Kanye himself is not disregarded in the hip hop scene in general, it's like he can't be one of the best rappers, though, because he doesn't write all his stuff. He's just denied that access to that title whatsoever. Although he did write all of his College Dropout era stuff, and so he can write. It's just he does not do that anymore. So
it's also in rap, there's a lot more respect given to the producer. Where like in pop, like you don't know who composed those things.
Yeah, I guess these people don't get any credit, and unless 100%. Like I mean I started recognizing this phenomenon, I think, with One Direction. Many years ago, my sister, you know, when they first got really popular with like "You Don't Know You're Beautiful" or something like that, and my sister was obsessed. Little sister was obsessed with this stuff. And like, she had the CD and looked at the CD, and it's like somewhere buried in like the end of a liner notes, you know, it says like written and produced by like, you know, two Swedish names. So I looked these guys up, and they're like songwriting team that like composes. You know, write songs, write whistle, they're artists. I'm like, really?
Yeah, that's how it'd be.
Yeah. At least give these guys credit.
In chats, asked any particular reason why Sweden is where most songs are written?
I have no idea. I guess a bunch of people in Sweden and countries like that have like internalized the American pop formula. That's my best guess.
It's just in their bones. Like American pop is just in their bones. Okay. So let's see. Let's read it. Many of you have suggested we show live pro sports, esports, and events. We are on it. On Saturday, July 10th, live from Las Vegas, interesting. How do you say his name? Poirier or something like that.
I guess. I have no clue.
I'm sorry. I'm not a UFC person. But and McGregor UFC matchup will be on AMC's big screens at 95 U.S. AMC theaters. Tickets only $25 versus $70 on pay-per-view. So I think I know why you put this in here. It's because of AMC, right?
I actually looked up theater. That's what I looked up.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, this is very fascinating of an angle that AMC is taking. And while I'm not a UFC person and I have problems with UFC, you know, from different angles, and so maybe this wouldn't be the place I would go with what I would show, doing live showings at AMC theaters is actually a pretty cool idea. I didn't come across my mind, but come on, like it's even better than going to like I don't know, to some guy who has a projector in his basement or in his room, you know, it's even cooler. It's huge, you know. I guess that's like
people go to like a sports bar for like the community feeling, right? But imagine that in like a big screen, you know.
Yeah, that would be wild. Yeah, and you have like proper
Super Bowl parties, Super Bowl washings at the theater. Mm.
Yeah.
That's an amazing idea, and hats off to AMC for coming up with something good, because I actually wrote them off for dead. I'm not kidding. Like, I was just like, they won't do anything good, because they've just rolled over and died for the past like 10 years, and so I'm giving up any hope that they're going to do anything innovative. But this is cool. I think that their cinema offerings need work, though, like in terms of movies. If they're going to continue to sell movies, then you got to do some stuff in that field as well. But this is a good start to not dying. So, yeah, I guess that's really just a slow clap. Although, again, maybe UFC wouldn't be my go-to, but...
Is this the first time on our show that Irving has praised AMC or any other theater chain for their business plan?
Whoa.
I think it is. Like, I'm actually like going to research this afterwards, because I'm just so surprised. I'm like, wow, they actually did something. And $25 versus $70, I mean, that's a great, like, just that alone. You got butts in seats immediately just on the economics of it. And that's really great. And they're going to sell drinks, of course, at like three times like what it would normally cost. And they're going to sell popcorn at like 100 times. And so you still have the concession problem where, but at least this uses their current terrible advantage of being a concessions business to make some money. I guess in that sense, it's a positive development.
Why does pay-per-view cost so much compared to movies?
I don't know. I actually did not know it cost $70 to watch a UFC match. It seems a little absurd to me, but
interesting. All right.
maybe people know people don't watch these things alone, and so people would defray the cost. Maybe they know that the vibe is to watch it with a group, you know, and so people are willing to pay $70, you know, split amongst a group or something like that. I don't know. We'll see what they do with that. They should take freaking Super Bowl away from Amazon, please. So take football out of Amazon's grubby hands if you can, AMC. That'll be the next move. All right. So gaming. So this is our last hot take of the night. So let's see.
All right. Title is Games with Solo Mode Are Stupid. All right. It says games like Apex Legends are great games but don't have a solo mode option are very dumb. They force people who play solo to fight two other people who probably are on a team. This is not fun. I'm not going to magically enjoy carrying people I play alone with, so I only have to cover my butt. I don't want to play against a team every FPS game. At least should have a 1v1 mode. Games in general, despite being the next generation, have way less content than two old console generations ago. All right, sorry, I failed to read for quite a bit. The general premise is just that all games should have some offline mode. In a lot of multiplayer games, I guess some games should have solo modes to do 1v1s. Okay. Yeah, the problem I can see with that is when you have like a 1v1 queue, right? You're splitting your queue up, which if you say you had two queues, for example, right? And you had a 2v2 queue, and then you decided to add a 1v1 queue, right? Assuming that, you know, it depends on how it's going to split, how many people are going to want to play on each queue in general. But you're going to end up, no matter what, increasing queue times for both everyone, really, which could be undesirable. That's really interesting. The amount of game modes you can possibly have in a game that has like a queue system where you select the game mode and then it queues you up and you have to wait for it to give you a server. Like, the amount of game modes you can have is entirely dependent on how many players you have, or else you'll have like massive queue times. So you have a lot of game modes but not enough players, so you can scale game modes with players. Or some games do it in a clever way where it's like, there's a bunch, like a quick match, and it's just like any game mode, and I'll just put you in any game mode, which is okay, because then it speeds up your time. And yeah, you don't lose any time there. But for something like this, where it's 1v1 or 2v2, normally you'd be picking, because if you're playing alone, you do not want to play 2v2s, because you're going to play against party members, probably people who are together and more coordinated, probably. If you're playing in twos, you can't play in ones. So you have a actual divide where people are not going to be queuing for both at once, probably. So yeah, in this scenario, you're going to end up increasing queue times potentially really badly. I understand why they have like the number they choose for like battle royale games, 2v2s, you know, depends on the game, 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, whatever, should be chosen strategically, I think. Of course, you can have multiple, but which ones you choose should be chosen very purposefully about like what kind of game this is. Because, you know, let's say you have a game where you have a 3v3 game mode. Understand that this is an acceptable game of people who are in groups of three. And if you're in a group of three, that's great. If you're in a group of two, it's not so bad. If you're alone, that's kind of unfortunate because you're going to run up against whole teams of three that you have to fight, and you being uncoordinated is going to end up screwing you over a little bit. 1v1 is good for everyone, essentially. 2v2 is pretty good, too, because if you're alone, not too bad. If you're in a pair, that's just fine. The problem is that when you have low scales, you can't have people who have a lot of friends they want to play with or whatever, then they just can't play with them. I don't know what Apex Legends has besides from 2v2s. I would assume like the generic is 2v2s and 4v4s, right? Because you don't want to do 3v3s because that's not enough of a jump to warrant increasing the queue time a lot, essentially. So they just do 2v2s and 4v4s or something like that. And then 1v1 is the same sort of situation where the queue time, you're going to have a queue time jump despite having just only just one less person versus a 2v2. Yeah, I don't play Apex Legends, so I don't know what the queue times are like, but I would totally understand why they wouldn't add a whole another queue just for 1v1s, which is only one off 2v2s. So yeah, that's my stance on that, I guess. I also don't think it should be a ubiquitous thing, as I say, like, just games should have that.
Yeah, no, I didn't think about that from the logistical angle at all. So I think that's an interesting point, like how matchmaking times get affected by that. Do you think that there are some games that, like, what about, like, for indie developers? Do you think they should, you know, if they, let's say they make a battle royale game or something like that, should they have as many game modes as they think people might like and then scale it back? Or, because they might not necessarily know what will work, like a AAA developer does, or like, you know, they don't have as many resources to figure it out, but at the same time they don't have as many resources to make a million game modes. So I guess I don't know.
Are you saying they don't, like, what should indie game developers do when deciding what game modes to put in because they don't know which one people are gonna like? Is that what you're trying to say?
Pretty much.
I mean, I guess testing and a lot of testing and just hoping that you get it right. Having a lot of people play, have early access copies that you can give out, whatever, or pre-alpha, beta, whatever stage you're in, and then test it, see how it goes, and then you remove or add or do whatever to the game modes that is required. That's why we have stuff like that, because it is an unknown what it's going to be like when you release the game. So you have a pre-release where people play it beforehand, and hopefully gives you a good release.
Cool.
Also, I disagree with games in general have less content. I don't know about that one, man. Depends, but like...
Yeah.
Two whole generations ago? That's a long time ago, dude. That's a really long... That's Xbox 360. I don't know about that one.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for arguing with Reddit this week. Is there any particularly interesting news that you guys have noticed this past week?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I feel like there's something. Oh, we ended up talking about it. I think I was going to bring up Clifford the Big Red Dog movie in the news segment, but we ended up talking about it earlier. Don't watch the movie. Don't spend your movie on these terrible. You already know it's bad. If you have children, it will only make them not want to watch movies in the future, so don't bring them to it.
I mean, my first ever film was Thomas the Tank Engine and, like, I'm not going to give a title, but, like, Thomas and the Magic Lady or something, you know, the original Thomas the Tank Engine movie, which is literally unwatchable. So, I mean, I survived that when I was four, so.
True.
My first movie in theaters.
Well, okay, at least save yourself the $15 and, I don't know, buy your kid an ice cream instead or something. I don't know. Like, do something better with your life.
Or just a good movie.
Or, yeah, just, or, I don't know. Well, there are no, kids' movies are unfortunately rare and rarer these days in cinemas, which I think is actually sad. But just buy something good on Blu-ray or, I don't know, do something like that. Oh, yeah, so, yeah, that's arguing with Reddit for this week. I think it was pretty fun. So new to this week is we're splitting these up into three segments. First segment, second segment, third segment. In the future, those will each be like about a round of these reactions to these hot takes. But most importantly, like I said, if you like the content, if you love the content, I would just love to see us pool together into a community on Discord. Link in the description wherever you are. We want to just keep the conversation flowing during the week, not just when we're on here. And hopefully, we can get larger and larger conversations. Thank you to the people in the chat who have been engaging with us this week. And lastly, I'll say thank you to Producer Wife for Producer Wife Steph for editing and doing all the stuff for the podcast. So with that, I'll say have a great week and look out for the releases.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for watching.
Bye.